Hello, baseball fans, and welcome back to another episode of the Roster Rhetorical. This week is episode number 21. As always, I am your host, Chris Schubert. And before I introduce my lovely co-host this week, I have to remind all of the lovely listeners out there where you can find this show each and every week, and that is on iTunes. If you open up iTunes in the top right corner, there's a little search bar. If you search the Roster Rhetorical or MLB Daily Dish, the podcast will come up, and you click on our little picture will be there. You click on that, and it will take you to our show page. And there you'll get all the episodes that are all there. You backlogged. If you want to go listen to our first episode, you can do that. But each episode every week that gets released gets put there, so you will have it as soon as it drops. There's a little subscribe button there. You can click that so you get it automatically downloaded to you on iTunes or on your iPhone device, so you have it at all times. Also, while you're there, leave a rating and a comment. It really helps us out. So now that we got the business side of everything taken care of, let me introduce my wonderful co-host this week for the second time, and I'll explain a little bit by that what I mean. Matt Juice Goldman. Matt, how are you?
I'm lovely. How are you?
I'm good. This is the second time we're recording the show to let everybody know what I meant by that earlier comment. We recorded this show last night. And Matt went by the name Matt the Bat Goldman. He has now taken upon himself every week in our little Skype call to give himself a new name. So we recorded the show last night, and we had talked about a litany of things. We had Dexter Fowler signing with the Orioles. We talked about the Orioles signing Giovanni Gallardo, Jose Bautista, Bryce Harper. We talked about David Ortiz's comments about Jose Reyes. We talked about all of it. And I woke up this morning ready to edit the show and to get it ready for the site. And I get a text from Matt Goldman because I wasn't in front of the internet. And he goes, we have to re-record the show because Dexter Fowler is with the Cubs. And I said, excuse me? I have no idea what you're talking about. And then I looked up on Twitter and Dexter Fowler did re-sign with the Cubs, forcing us to re-record the show. So all the things I mentioned that we talked about in last night's episode that you will never hear. The audio is hidden in a vault in my email. We will get to tonight, but Matt, let's start with the obvious, and that is Dexter Fowler. Is spurring the proper term here? I mean, we really don't know what went on, but I guess spurring the Orioles in favor of re-signing with the Cubs on a one-year, $13 million deal with a mutual option for $9 million for the 2017 season. Matt, what the heck went on here?
I think spurning is a fair way to put it. The Orioles GM, Dan Duquette, was quoted as saying, you know, if he wants to take less money to go somewhere else, that's his, you know, he can do whatever he wants. But it's just interesting that according to Ken Rosenthal, in an article that he wrote tonight, just about a couple hours ago or a few hours ago now, is that according to Casey Close, his agent, well, Fowler's agent, not Ken Rosenthal's agent, obviously. There was never an agreement. They were never close to an agreement. So it's just so strange to see the media get something so wrong, especially, you know, a signing for a player like Fowler. You know, he's not a lesser known guy. He was one of the, despite a crowded outfield market this year, he was one of the top free agents on the market. And Ken Rosenthal floated this idea, and I had a similar thought earlier this morning when I learned the news that Fowler was headed back to Chicago, is that you got to wonder if maybe a couple people or one person in the Orioles front office that was in a position to know things about Fowler, you wonder if they leaked the information potentially in a power move to try and get Casey Close and Fowler to accept their terms rather than keep pushing for an opt out, because there potentially would have been more pressure from fans of the Orioles for Fowler to agree to the 3-year $35 million deal that we thought he signed.
So this is one of the more interesting stories of the offseason. It may be one of the more weird things I've seen since I've really started covering all 30 teams and their individual roster moves. Coming up on a year now with MLB Daily Dish, one of the weird things that I've seen. And this was the talk of the day in the MLB Daily Dish offices and in the, you know, SB Nation baseball offices all day long. People were talking about this, trying to come up with plausible reasons for why this happened. And the bottom line, Chris Cotillo, our MLB insider, posted a series of tweets on Twitter. And if you haven't seen them, I would highly suggest going to his Twitter. It's at Chris Cotillo, and reading them, because he lays out from an insider's perspective how something like this could happen and how it's very, very unlikely that all the media got this wrong. And to what Ken Rosenthal said and to what Matt said, it's very likely that high up team source, multiple sources, went to media members and told them that a deal was done and they reported on it. And, you know, I'm not an insider. I don't have a plethora of sources like Cotillo and Rosenthal and all these guys do. But we talk about this a lot, both, you know, off microphone and when we're, you know, between these airwaves. But if you are a reporter, you know, one source, you know, you don't run with one source most of the time, especially when it's either an agent or a team official, you know, that could be pulling your leg or trying to manipulate the negotiations, you know. But when two, three, four team sources are telling you that a deal is done, you know, that's reassurance that this is more than likely done. Maybe not in that exact moment, but in a couple hours or a day or two, something will get done. So to see this just spiral out of control so quickly is just so odd in today's social media baseball world, where, you know, if something gets posted on Twitter from a reporter, you know, most of the time it ends up being true. The other sort of interesting tidbit coming out of this is the second time this offseason that the Cubs have sort of swooped in out of nowhere to steal a free agent. If you'll remember, back in December, when the Ben Zobrist sweepstakes were going on, it appeared that the Mets were the front runner, that the Mets had offered him a 4-year, $48 million contract, that he was, committed to going there. He was just discussing it with his wife and that's where they were going to end up going. And then out of nowhere, we heard that he was signed with the Cubs and the deal was actually done the day before. And, you know, all these reporters reported on it and they said that, you know, that he was going to the Mets and they had no idea that this Cubs deal had even been done. So this is the second time the Cubs have really done this, but excuse me, this is just a really weird story. And what we're seeing now is Dexter Fowler's agent, Casey Close, sort of try to save face here and say that there was no deal even close, that this is, you know, he released a statement, which you can find on Twitter, and I'm probably going to butcher it in paraphrase form. But, you know, he blamed the media, he blamed the Orioles, and part of me feels like it's him saving face for this. Matt, did you feel the same?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely possible. It's just, like you said, it's such a strange situation to see a reported agreement in place, and then a full day later, we find out that, at least from the agent's point of view, there was no done deal. I think Fowler had supposedly texted Austin Jackson, not Austin Jackson,
segment. Yeah. We're going to get to that later.
He had supposedly texted Adam Jones, conveying his sense of excitement to be joining the Orioles, and perhaps there was a miscommunication in a tense in the text, and maybe he said, you know, I'm looking forward to potentially joining the Orioles soon. You know, it's impossible to know, but Casey Close did not mince words, and he obliterated the Orioles. The media kind of got caught in the crosshairs, but as Chris said on Twitter, you know, if you get two or three team sources all telling you the same thing, while you'd like to have confirmation from both sides, from an agent or a player, with Excel, it's just impossible because they're not in the business of reporting that news prematurely until all the T's have been crossed and all the I's have been dotted. So from the media's view, I'm sure they were convinced it was a done deal. Why would the Orioles make up a story about an agreement? But, you know, this also just kind of reminded me of the Wilmer Flores debacle, where everyone was sure that he had been traded to the where was it again? I'm having trouble.
He was going to the Brewers
for Carlos Gomez, and then we found out that was not true. It had never been agreed to, and that one way or another, a reporter had gotten some false information and ran with it, and Wilmer Flores wound up crying at shortstop and then became America's favorite backup shortstop or utility shortstop, whatever you want to call him. And this just kind of, in a very different sense, this reminded me of it.
That's an excellent comparison. it just weird is the only really word that I can, you know, come up to describe what this was, you know. You put it best. It's, you know, 2 to 3 team sources telling you this is very, very huge, because to get multiple confirmations, you know, allows you to run with it. And you would obviously like to get the agent of the player to confirm it as well. But Casey Close and Excel aren't in the business of that. So when you get 2 to 3, you know, potentially 4 team sources telling you that a deal's done, you run with it because you know you're not going to get anything from Excel and Casey Close anyway. So to get all that information and to run with it, and then it end up, you know, not being that way, is rather odd. And for Casey Close to blast the media is just, I think, rather hypocritical for a guy that doesn't go to the media and tell them anything anyway.
You know, I just realized this now. The same thing happened with Bud Black in the Nationals. He'd reportedly been hired. Everyone reported it was a done deal. And then it turned out that the Learners weren't willing to pay Bud Black what Bud Black is worth and what other managers are getting these days. And the deal fell apart. So I think we're starting to see it more and more with the way that social media works and reporters being more eager to get that first publication out rather than to be one of the people saying, I have also confirmed Ken Rosenthal's report, or I have also confirmed John Morrissey or John Heyman's report. And maybe, you know, maybe they're getting a little trigger happy, but also, like you said, 2 or 3 team sources telling you something, confirmation from an agent if you can get it. That's always been the way of the world, and it's just seemingly starting to bite people in the wrong location these days.
And I could understand if somebody who doesn't, you know, cover this stuff every day like we do, and they're listening to this show, and they say, you know, maybe these reporters just aren't doing, you know, their due diligence, and they're getting sloppy, and, you know, they're not maybe they're not, you know, getting all this information. Trust me, these guys aren't making this stuff up. They're hearing from sources that they vetted, that they trust, that have proven to be trustworthy in the past. A guy like Ken Rosenthal, a guy like our own Chris Cotillo, John Heyman, these guys don't build their credibility by taking a source, you know, and reporting him as soon as he hears something from him. You know, they build relationships. They, over time, you know, prove their trustworthiness to each other. And, you know, these reporters don't just throw stuff out there and to see if it sticks. You know, there is a long process that gets done in order to make sure that this information is accurate. So, you know, you take that into account to the situation, and, you know, you question, well, where did it go wrong? And I, back to what Ken Rosenthal said and what Matt said at the beginning of this, you know, this topic, maybe the Orioles leaked this in order to get Fowler to agree to a deal. You know, and for Close to blame, Close has every reason to blame the Orioles if that is the case. But to blame the media is, I think, a little hypocritical, because, you know, they're just doing their job based on what they're hearing. And I think that at the end of the day is where this – we have a sort of a – what's the word I'm looking for here, Matt? Help me out. A convulsion of media members, of the front offices of players, of agents, of the fans, all meeting in this social media world. And, you know, the fans want up-to-the-minute information about what their team is doing. The front offices have a vesting interest in getting their information out there to help, you know, themselves in negotiations or to get a player signed. The agent has that same motivation for the player's best interests. And you have the media member that's in the middle of all of this that is, you know, trying to do their job and report accurate information while also, you know, trying to avoid being the mouthpiece for both the agent and the front office. And situations like these, which, you know, don't happen very often, but they have, you know, they've happened a couple times now this year, you know, that we're seeing where all of these things come together, and this is what could potentially happen.
Yeah. And now, I just want to say, you know, it seemingly got lost in all this back and forth between the Orioles, Fowler, and now Casey Close. The Cubs now probably have the most flexible lineup in the National League. They have 4 outfielders with Schwarber, Soler, Fowler now, and Hayward. They have they have 2 backup outfielders in Zobrist and Baez, who can also play seemingly every infield position except first base. And they've got the perfect manager to be able to handle it all in Joe Maddon. Yep. So while we've, you know, kind of talked our fair share about Casey Close and the debacle that is currently the Orioles, and seemingly every time they try and sign a free agent now, the Cubs are just utterly stacked offensively.
Well, I want to switch from one leaked report to another. And Matt, you actually suggested this segue, and it makes a lot of sense. Jose Bautista's contract negotiations, or lack thereof, became very public. Was this Monday, yesterday, 2 days ago? I forget now that we've recorded the show twice.
Just yesterday. A lot has happened.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we've been repeating ourselves because we have. We've done this show twice now. You actually reported on this yesterday for the site. And that is that Jose Bautista was asked about, you know, his upcoming contract negotiations because he is a free agent at the end of the year. And he put it, I want to say as bluntly as you possibly could put it, as a player who's going to enter free agency. He said that he submitted what his number was to the Toronto brass and said, quote, they either meet it or it is what it is. And, you know, everyone was then wondering, well, what is that number? And we found out what it was. Originally, we heard it was 5 years for $150 million. So about an average of $30 million a year. Then we heard later on from John Heyman and Ken Rosenthal that Bautista asked the Blue Jays for more than five years, and more than $150 million, but the AAV was below $30 million. So Matt, this is a guy that's going to be 37.
36.
36. He will be 37 when this new contract is signed.
No. He's 35 right now, I think.
Is he?
Yeah. His 2016 season will be his age 35 season.
Then I'm glad we're re-recording the show because I think I said that last night. So there we go. So 35 will be 36. Can you see the Toronto Blue Jays paying this person, Jose Bautista, until his age 41 season for, you know, somewhere near $30 million a year?
That would be a resounding no from me.
It's a hard no?
That's a hard no.
Hard no.
You know, he's been incredibly valuable to the Blue Jays over the last 5 or 6 years now. I can't remember how long his contract has been. And, you know, he signed what now looks like a team-friendly deal, but when it was signed, the Blue Jays were taking a big chance that Bautista was now this newfound godlike power hitter and wasn't going to regress into what he was before, which was a middling outfielder with no power. And Jose Bautista wants to recoup some of that lost value, which, you know, makes sense. Obviously he's been more than what the Blue Jays have paid for, but you know, when you have a guy that's 26, 25, you know, whatever, and he's like Bryce Harper or Mike Trout, and he's still in his prime, you do kind of, in a way, pay for past performance and what you expect them to do over the next 5, 6, 7 years. But when that guy is 36 years old, you know, or at least you expect that that player is going to start to regress fairly soon just because of how age curves generally work. Obviously, there are exceptions every now and again, but Bautista's probably going to start his decline in 2 or 3 years. And to think about paying a 41-year-old close to $30 million a year is just tough to swallow. And, you know, $30 million is going to not be as much as we think it is now down the road in a couple of years, just because of the way that inflation and baseball salaries are moving towards. But in today's money, it's just ridiculous. And, you know, in 2002, when Barry Bonds was still 36, he was heading into his age 37 season, he signed a 5-year deal worth $90 million. So based off of what we know from Rosenthal and Heyman, that he's asking for at least 6 years for, Heyman put it as more than $150 million. So we'll say that 151 is the low end of the range. That would mean at the very least, Jose Bautista is asking for Barry Bonds money, which now adjusted for inflation would be $120 million, with an extra 31 for $151 million. And at the ceiling, he'd be asking for Barry Bonds money, which again was $120 million in, I guess, 2015 money, I should say, plus another $88 million if you go to 7 years at 29.75. I can't remember the exact number I used at the time, but That's a pretty big range. So he's looking for somewhere between 151 and 208 million. I'm assuming that there's no way in hell that he asked for 8 years, because I mean, 6 and 7 is ridiculous, and 8 would just be Jose Bautista detaching himself from reality. So there's no way that this is going to happen. I think with the way that potentially we saw the Orioles leak the Fowler news, I'm even more confident that it's that the initial report of 5 years, 150 million came from at least one or two people in the Blue Jays front office, because they know how badly Toronto fans want Jose Bautista to remain as part of their team. He became a legend after the bat flip, and he was just, I mean, incredibly loved even before that. So by putting out this information, they're letting the fans know what his ludicrous asking price is. So at least the majority of the fans will see that number and go, okay, you know what? If he's not willing to negotiate, which he said he's not, then if he walks, I get it. I don't want Jose Bautista earning that much money at 36, 37, 38, 39, and then, you know, 40, 41. And especially since Edwin Encarnacion is going to be a free agent after this year, if they're going to keep one player from their team, it would just make so much sense to me to keep Encarnacion. He's, I think, 32 now, heading into his age 33 season. He might have already turned 33. So he's younger than Bautista. He's probably got more left in the tank, and I can't imagine he's going to be asking for as much money.
You mentioned exactly what I wanted to bring up, and that is that Bautista said he's not going to negotiate. No negotiations. And not sure we take that at face value. Now, it's coming from the player. We should probably, you know, there's some value to him saying that. But I wonder if the Blue Jays do come to the table willing to at least talk, at least become close to the number that he's asking for, if he would, excuse me, at least back down off of that no negotiation ultimatum that he's put out there, and, you know, meet with them and discuss a number. But like you said, Edwin Encarnacion is younger, probably has more left in the tank. And they're going to, I mean, Bautista cannot play the outfield.
No, he should be a DH right now.
Right, but in the latter years of that deal, there's no way he can play outfield. So he's going to have to transition to DH anyway. So by, you know, signing Bautista to this extension, you're forcing, the Blue Jays are forcing their own hand, and they're going to have to let Encarnacion go. And I'm not sure if that's in the best interest of their team. So it's going to be really interesting, because, you know, this is a guy that became an icon. I mean, this sounds weird, but the bat flip, you know, made him a Canadian hero. For, you know, this is Canada's only baseball team. You know, people who don't live in Toronto sort of rally around the Blue Jays. You know, I know people in Calgary, and there are people all over Canada that, you know, this is their baseball team. You know, they don't have the Expos anymore, so Toronto's their team. So this guy's a, you know, an icon. Did you mention the fact that he has not had to pay for a meal?
I did not. But yeah, he has reportedly not had to take out his wallet to pay for anything in terms of food or drink at a restaurant since the bat flip. So, you know, in Toronto terms, he is Dave Roberts, because after Dave Roberts stole that fateful base against Mariano Rivera and Jorge Posada and Derek Jeter, he became an instant legend in Boston. That's arguably the most stolen base, or that's arguably the most famous and historic stolen base in the history of baseball. So it doesn't take much to elevate you. I mean, obviously those were both hugely important moments, but it, you know, in the grand scheme of things, stealing a base or hitting a ball really far and then throwing your bat like a crazed madman aren't huge ripples in the fabric of space-time, so to speak. But, you know, they resonate with fans, and both of them have just become these hugely beloved figures in their respective cities.
Right. And, you know, we've discussed this on the show before, that there is value in things that don't have statistics behind them. And there's value in being an icon in a city and being a hero to a city. So I wonder how much that is going to impact the Blue Jays front office thought process in this. Because they're going to have a lot of different variables and factors to weigh when they make this decision. There's the financial motivation. There's the baseball motivation of, does it make their team better? And then there's the emotional motivation. You know, this is a guy that is an icon and is a hero to the city of Toronto. And, you know, how are the fans going to react? You know, there are going to be the more level-headed fans that think like a lot of the people that listen to this show and that read stuff on the site, that will realize that that's a lot of money for a guy that's going to be 36. Maybe it's not in the best interest of the team. You know, Jose, we had a good run. It's time for you to go your way. We'll go our way. Good luck in the future. There, you know, that's a realistic way to look at it. There are going to be the diehards that don't want to see a guy like that go. That's completely understandable from an emotional standpoint. So a lot of things that have to go into this decision, and the Blue Jays are in a very, very tough spot right now because let's just face it, they're not the Dodgers. They're not the Yankees. They don't have, you know, an endless supply of money. So these decisions have a ripple effect to what their future payrolls and what they're able to do payroll flexibility-wise down the road. So it will be rather interesting. So, Matt, I don't want to leave the Orioles hanging because while Dexter Fowler may have heel turned on them, to use a wrestling term, they did sign starter pitcher Yovani Gallardo. And I feel like we should at least talk about this because I don't want to bash the Orioles all day in this show. They did make a good move.
Yeah, you know, their rotation, actually, you know, now that you mention it, I realize I messed up their starting rotation last night, so it's good that we had to re-record.
You know, there are silver linings and everything.
Just got to look on the bright side. So, you know, heading into the 2016 season, they would have trotted out a rotation of Chris Tillman, Miguel Gonzalez, Ubaldo Jimenez, Kevin Gausman, and then I believe, I'm going to mess this up. Pronunciation was Odrasmir Despaigne.
Odrisimer Despaigne.
Odrisimer. Although, you know, now that I mentioned it, I'm looking at the Orioles depth chart, which was last verified as of today because Yovani Gallardo is now on it. And Despaigne is not listed anywhere. So that's kind of weird. I wonder if there's something up with maybe his medical in the
chart. He was considered a swing man. So there's
right, but he's not even in the bullpen.
Okay. So
I wonder if there's a hold up with that deal now. But obviously, that might be premature. Although, when we had a Twitter question last show about a Yovani Gallardo failed medical, I said that was a bit premature,
and we both did.
I turned out to be completely wrong about that. So who knows these days? But you know, if they hadn't gotten Gallardo, that rotation is just a giant mess. It still is somewhat of a mess. I mean, Tillman's really not that good. Gonzalez is not good at all. Jimenez has never been as good as he was that one season in Colorado. He's still somewhat valuable, but you know, he's not an ace. And Kevin Gausman, it's still unclear what to expect of him despite being a top prospect. It's great that they don't have to trot out Mike Wright out there every fifth day. So at the very least, they've improved their rotation. But, you know, if you think about what they were last year, obviously they added, I'm also probably going to butcher this name, but Hyunsoo Kim, from the KBO, I believe. I could be getting that wrong too. I'll check so we can have our fact check at the end. But they kept Chris Davis. They kept Darren O'Day. They lost Wei Yin Chen and replaced him with Gallardo. So I really don't think you can say they got better this offseason. They stayed relatively the same. Obviously, losing Davis and O'Day would have hurt. But just bringing them back to replace their potentially lost spots doesn't mean you've improved. It just means you've stayed the same. And then Gallardo, I don't think, is as good as Wei Yin Chen, and I don't think he will be in the future. So their rotation got worse, and now they don't have Dexter Fowler.
Well, they never had Dexter Fowler.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, Gallardo's K per nine rates have just been going down since 2012. It was 9. The next year, he followed it up with 7.17 per nine. Then in 2014, it went down to 6.83. And in 2015, it hit a career low of 5.91. And his swinging strike rates have also been decreasing. It's at a career low, or tied for a career low, of 6.5%. which he last produced in 2008, which was his second year in the major leagues. So, you know, it's fair to wonder what you're going to get for Yovani Gallardo. It's only a 2-year guaranteed deal, maybe 3 if they pick up the option. But the other side effect of this is now that the Orioles only seemed willing to give up that first round pick if they were also going to get a guy like Fowler so they could part with 2 picks. It, obviously, 2 picks sounds worse than just giving up 1, but when you're thinking about improving your team, it does make more sense. So part of me wonders if they're going to go out and try and sign Ian Desmond, who could be backup for JJ Hardy if he has another down year, but he could also play in the outfield because I believe he's being marketed as kind of a multi-tool positional player. Obviously he's not Ben Zobrist, but there have been reports that he could play the outfield. Or maybe they try and trade for Jay Bruce, who the Reds clearly are willing to get rid of. I'm not entirely sure what the Orioles would have to give up in that situation because their farm system is pretty light and they desperately need their guys to pan out. Otherwise, they're going to be in trouble in the next few years.
And we, as we discussed on last night's show, loss recording number five, that the Orioles do have some help coming from the starting pitching end in Hunter Harvey and Dylan Bundy, but their health is a major concern. These are guys that have had some injuries. Dylan Bundy has a plethora of injuries. Hunter Harvey, you know, nothing that would send off alarm bells that it would be recurring, that he would have, you know, a lingering problem. Bundy, not so much. So if those two guys can really get together and sort of be pieces that could be added late into the year, that could help make the Orioles rotation a little bit better. But those are two huge question marks and not something you can bank on. But like Matt said, they're going to have to probably get a bat. Desmond, you know, maybe doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but he would be a bat for their lineup. So they may add him. Fowler was a leadoff guy, the guy they could put at the top of the order. And there's not really a guy like that left. And there's nobody that I can think of offhand that they could trade for that would be that. So they're going to have to get creative with how they fill that offensive need that they need. Matt?
Yes.
Let's talk about the absurdity that is the Nationals trying to explore an extension for Bryce Harper.
Yeah, I think we beat that one to death last night, but since no one will ever hear that, there was reportedly extension talks between the Nationals and Harper, and then I guess this morning I'm pretty sure I saw a tweet that essentially said that Mike Rizzo said that was not happening.
Good. I'm glad Mike Rizzo can be real.
Yeah, and you know, even if they were trying to negotiate an extension, Harper's a Boris client, so the only way that Harper and Boris would have agreed to any type of extension is if the Nationals were willing to offer fair market value, which would be as if Harper was a free agent, because, you know, he's going to blow away the record contract that Stanton set with his 13-year, $325 million deal, which I don't think there's any chance in hell that that contract plays out, since he's got an opt out after the sixth or seventh year, I believe. But you know, there have been reports that Harper might get somewhere close to $600 million, which sounds absolutely insane. But, you know, he just had one of the greatest seasons that a 23-year-old or a 22-year-old rather has ever had in the history of Major League Baseball. He put up nearly a 10 F4 season. He had over 40 home runs. He was finally the player that we had been promised when he first graced the cover of Sports Illustrated as a 16-year-old. I remember sitting in physical therapy as, I think, an 18-year-old and going, man, I really got screwed with the gene department there. But he's just, you know, Mike Trout left a lot of money on the table with his extension. He's obviously still going to get paid one day once he does hit free agency, but there's no way that Harper and Boris are going to do that. So if the Nationals have any inkling or desire to lock him up, they're going to need to offer him a contract over $500 million. And I just don't think they're going to, if they're not willing to pay Bud Black $5 million or something, that I can't imagine there's any chance that the Learners would authorize a $500 million paycheck.
It was noble to think that they could try to sign him to an extension. But I said this last night on our Lost show. He knows how much he's worth. He's a Scott Boras client. There's no way he's taking less. I mean, there's nothing that he can do in the next 3 years besides, and I mean this in a serious way, and I don't wish this on Bryce Harper, but he would have to get hurt so bad that he couldn't play for these 3 years that would stop him from having a big payday. Seriously, that would be what it would take. He knows that. Scott Boras, his agent, knows that. The Nationals know that. So to try to make it, you know, the sign of extension is a noble cause, but you know, everybody involved knew it wasn't going to happen, and they, you know, they still have 3 years to work this out. So maybe as it gets closer, the Nationals are in a better financial spot and they can potentially talk about it. But right now, I don't think it's going to happen.
No, I mean, you know, he hit 330 last year with an OBP of 460 and a slugging percentage of 649. If you're a part of the sabermetric crowd, his WOBA was 461, which is just absurd. And his WRC plus was 197. I think that's the best season since Bonds in 2004. I might have the year wrong. I'll check. 42 homers, 118 runs, 99 RBI. And, you know, the Nationals kind of crumbled down the stretch, and he still managed to score almost 120 runs. The stolen bases, not really anything to write home about, but, you know, he had a walk percentage of 19%, a K percentage of 20. So he nearly walked as much as he struck out, and he's finally reached that season where he, you know, where he dominated the league like he did in JUCO and in high school. And it was insane to watch over the entire year. He was just so clearly better than everyone else that, you know, he elevated himself to where we say, you know, he should have to go play in another league, like where Miguel Cabrera and Madison Bumgarner and Clayton Kershaw and Jose Fernandez and those guys just all run around and play these weird pickup games.
He is also going to change the way baseball free agency is handled. Excuse me. Yeah, I mean, he's going to get $500, $600 million, and that's going to change what other players get. Now, obviously, he's a once-in-a-generation talent. No one is Bryce Harper. But there are players who are going to have, you know, potential similar years to him. And when they hit free agency, they can say, well, you know, Harper's getting X amount per year. I'm worth that. And with the amount of money that we're, you know, we're seeing pumped into the game right now with players that are probably getting more than they, you know, than maybe the numbers say they deserve, you know, we could see Bryce Harper have a trickle-down effect to the rest of baseball and really change what other players are getting, players of you know, lesser degrees of skill to him in the number side, get more money than they would have gotten in the past. And yeah. I think that's really the interesting thing that could come out of this.
And the MLBPA loves that. They look for these guys who are going to sign ridiculous deals, because no matter how outlandish or how extreme they are on one side of the spectrum, they right. do have a trickle-down effect, and it will mm-hmm. raise the bar for lesser free agents.
Right. And that's good for the game, because, you know, it all the players, you know,
they all benefit
earn from that. They all benefit, and the PA loves that. So they're probably licking their chops at the thought of Harper getting $500 to $600 million. So, Matt, the Juice Goldman, before the show, you mentioned a story to me that I actually hadn't heard from today, because I have actually been in bed sick all day. I'm sure you can hear it in my voice and in the coughing. So, Matt, I'm going to let you tell the people about this story, which I find hysterical.
Right, and I accidentally teased it earlier with my name drop of Austin Jackson. So there was a report I'm sure it was listed on other places, but I'm looking at it on Hardball Talk from Bill Bear that free agent outfielder Austin Jackson reportedly rejected a contract offer of 1 year between $5 to $6 million from the Angels. I guess the initial report was actually from Alden Gonzalez. If I'd bothered to read the entire first sentence before the show, I would have known that. So my apologies, Mr. Gonzalez. But the funny part is that Austin Jackson, you know, he's still a free agent. Spring training has now started. He clearly doesn't have that many suitors knocking down on his door or blowing up his cell phone to come play for them. And he turned down guaranteed, let's say, $5.5 million from the Angels, which you could take to mean several things. Maybe he does have another offer on the table. Maybe he's got a 2-year deal for lesser money that's more attractive, but I like to view it as that he just really doesn't want to play for the Angels because they're not that good. They've got Mike Trout, Albert Pujols, obviously, but if you look at the rest of their roster, it's kind of a mess. Their rotation doesn't inspire confidence despite the sheer number of starters they have on the depth chart. Obviously, the AL West is not exactly stacked. The Astros are going to be good. The Mariners could be good. The Rangers are probably going to be as good as they were last year, maybe a little better now that they have a full season of Cole Hamels and Yu Darvish is expected to return. The A's, you never know. Obviously, they've rebuilt so much, it's hard to project them. They did just get Chris Coughlin today, but the Angels just really don't seem like that great of a team. They seem to be wasting Mike Trout's prime, and they had so many holes to address this offseason, and for one reason or another that we'll probably never know, they just didn't address any of them. You wonder why they didn't go after Dexter Fowler. I know that that first round pick is tough to let go, especially with how prospects have become so, maybe overvalued is the right word, but you know, when you look at a guy like Chris Bryan or Kyle Schwarber or Posey and Bumgarner, and you see how they lead a franchise and you know that they were homegrown, I think players or front offices are starting to get a little too attached to that first round pick. You just wonder why they didn't do more. They made a trade for Andrelton Simmons and kind of blew up their farm system in the process. So it's just hilarious to me that there's a player out there that still needs a home and he's rejecting guaranteed life-changing amounts of money.
Right. And it's not like $1 million or $2 million. This is like $5 or $6 million. I mean, this is,
I would take a lot less money to play for the Angels if anyone out there is listening.
See, I'm not very good at baseball, so
I'm okay. I'm a varsity baseball coach right now, so I know a little something, something.
I mean, I would say that I know a little something, something about baseball, but I don't think I'm good.
I can catch a baseball. I probably couldn't hit very well, but
no, I would be obliterated by MLB pitching. I could probably catch though. I would be probably a defensive wizard, I would think.
I could field a couple ground balls.
Yeah, I could. No, not saying I'm Andrelton Simmons, but I could probably hold my own out there. So, but yeah, I would take $1 million or $2 million to play for the Angels. So to see a player, you know, a player who hasn't really, you know, had a great year, not coming off a great year, turn it down is a little surprising. But to play the devil's advocate, maybe he does have another deal on the table that he likes more and that he will sign relatively soon. I don't know. So, all right, since the other co-host that we have, Mike Bates, isn't here, this is my time to wrap up the show and tell everybody and remind everybody where they can get the show, and that is through iTunes. Like I mentioned in the beginning of the show, go to iTunes, in the top search bar, you type in the Rasta Rhetorical or MLB Daily Dish. Our podcast pops up with our picture. Click on the picture or the text below. It will take you to our show page where all of our episodes are. And if you, there's a little box that says subscribe. And if you click that button, every time the podcast gets released, you will have it automatically download to your iTunes or, if you have an iPhone, to your podcasting app on your iPhone. So you'll have it as soon as they drop. And if something like this happens where we have to re-record the show because of, you know, the baseball world messing with us, then, you know, you won't miss an episode because you'll have it as soon as they drop. You can also find the show on our Blog Talk Radio page. If you go to Blog Talk Radio and you look under sports, baseball, or you search the Rasta Rhetorical, it's there too. All the episodes are there for you if you want to listen off of your iTunes devices. You can also find the show at the bottom of any article on MLBDailyDish.com. It's all the way at the bottom below the, you know, other links for the day. There's a player there with the show. And if you have an Android, any of your podcasting apps that you would have there would have the show as well. Matt, we have to do Twitter, so I will handle this. You can follow Matt the Juice Goldman at the Original Bull, where he lately he's been tweeting about Kanye. You know what? I'll close the show with this. Do you like the new Kanye album?
I'm not a big fan. It seemed I saw a lot of people trying to explain its seemingly lack of a direction by saying that, you know, Pablo Picasso was very abstract and Kanye was trying to model that abstractness with this album. But I just thought it was all over the place. Didn't like a lot of songs. So I was listening to My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy today to remind me of the Kanye that I love.
Now, did you hear the report that he is making another album for the summer?
I did.
Which
some people think might be Watch the Throne 2. So in that case, I would be excited. If it's just a solo Kanye album, I'd still be worried.
Okay, I'm not a big Kanye fan. I actually haven't listened to many of his albums in full. So,
Watch the Throne was his album with Jay-Z.
Okay, you're my Kanye expert. That's why I'm asking you. So that's why I'm going to you on this. Okay, so if it's Watch the Throne 2, you're excited. If it's not, you're not excited.
I'd be tentatively excited yet worried at the same time.
Okay, So there you go. So if you want to hear Matt's takes on Kanye, he talks about space things at the Original Bull on Twitter. You can, you know, find that there. You can follow me at Chris R. Schubert. I tweet mostly about wrestling, really. It's really what
and
happens.
And hockey. You always leave hockey out.
Well, yeah, I do in my spare time when I'm not doing this and writing for Everybody Daily Dish. I do cover my colleges or my alum. I'm now an alumni now. My old college's hockey team, it's their last weekend of the season this weekend, so there'll only be a couple more days of that tweeting to be done. But yeah, I talk about wrestling, baseball. So, oh, I tweet about politics sometimes if I get really annoyed with something somebody says. So all that's there. You can find that there. So all right, hopefully this episode makes it to you, and we don't have to re-record it again. So if it does, thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
Adios.